Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is February 16th?
17th.
17th. And it's a joyous occasion today. And we're going to start this show off with the Fuck That Nigga Award and a shot. Glasses up. Fuck Rush Limbaugh. His ass going to hell. It's hell below, and we all want to go. You motherfucking piece of shit. You died of the cancer. You died of was it the brain cancer?
No, it was lung cancer.
Prostate, lung, you couldn't breathe, you fucking piece of shit. I hope you fucking choked on your vomit.
Good Lord.
And these are my, this is only my thoughts. I don't want anybody else on the show to get any heat. This is Jeffrey Sledge only. Fuck Rush Limbaugh. He gets the
first posthumous
Hall of Fame
Fuck That Nigga Award. In perpetuity.
And forever fuck Rush Limbaugh. And I don't want to hear I was eating the grape. I don't want to hear or see none of you cool niggas get on this social media and stop being like, man, you know, we ain't gotta be like them. We ain't got to be like that. Now, fuck that nigga. He deserves all the hate and smoke because that's what he lived by.
He's an awful, he was an awful human. He lived the fucking, he lived that life. Like, he was dedicated to that shit. And I don't really give a fuck about him. He really wouldn't have pissed on me if I was on fire. Never. So, you know, fuck him. Yeah, you know, I mean, it is what
I mean,
it is.
Yeah.
If you're going to play the game, then play it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like.
Very famously believed that cigarettes did not cause lung cancer. So here we are. Thank you for helping science.
He was a big cigar smoker as well.
Yeah.
He would often be, I think Cigar Aficionado had him on the cover a couple times, actually.
Okay.
Some yeah. He would famously like show up at a lot of these the smoker conventions and shit like that.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
He was a big, I'm sure that was a big part of his life up until recently.
Yeah. Until he was fucking trying to suck air through a straw. Piece of shit. So fuck him. Inca liked that one. She liked that one. So anyway, we ain't gonna waste no more time on that scumbag. Fuck him. Let's move on. Just mention Nye's gonna be taking a couple weeks off to handle some personal stuff. So we miss you. We love you, Nye. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Love you. Hold you down.
We'll hold you
absolutely
down.
I'll do my best.
Down. Hold it down. Inca gonna hold it down for the ladies.
Oh Lord.
Hold it down for the females, as they say. Inca, any shout outs? Since you're holding it down.
Oh, I do have a Black History shout out.
Hey, Ivy.
she says hello. Okay. big shout out to Ruth E. Carter, legendary costume designer.
Oh, the stylist and costume designer. Mm-hmm.
Yes. This week she is getting her Hollywood Walk of Fame star.
Ah, well and deserved.
She did all the Black classics, Love and Basketball and School
Black
Days
Panther.
And Coming to America and the Oscar for Black Panther, even like BAPS and What's Love Got to Do with It? All
everything, Carter, so. Everything dope.
You know everything saying? Dope. And well the first Black woman to win that Oscar in that category. So,
yep. Well deserved.
Big,
Ms.
Huge
Carter.
Shout out to her.
Well deserved. Well deserved. And congratulations on your star. Speaking of that, I actually was going to mention this anyway, but it kind of ties into that. So I stumbled across on Valentine's Day. Was it the TV one or was it the BET? I think it was the TV one. The one of them two. I don't know which one, you know, because I'm 78. But one of them two, showed black kind of love movies all day. They showed Best Friend. Not Best Friend. What's the Best Man? Best Man. They showed. Best Man. Mm-hmm. They showed a couple other ones. I'm blanking out on the other ones. But there were like,
this was
like,
all day Sunday.
This was yeah. I guess it was TV One. I believe it was TV One. And they just showed them like nonstop a bunch of movies. But one of the movies they showed, which I hadn't seen in a while, and I always, whenever I see a movie with this woman, it just makes, whenever I see anything with this woman, it just makes me, okay, I'll tell the person, then I'll spend why it was kind of like, clear. So they showed Mahogany with Diana Ross and Billy Dee Williams, which is a love story about this woman from Chicago who is a fashion designer. That's what the Ruth Carter thing clicked in my head. And she's like, from the South Side, you know, trying to get it on, so on for people, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, her fashions get picked up and she goes over to Italy at the time, which I thought was interesting because, you know, the fashion kind of business used to be a little more in Italy in the 70s. I mean, it's always in Paris, but Italy had a big, big stake in the fashion industry in the 70s, with like Giorgio Armani, Gianni Versace, mm-hmm. and some of the other big Italian designers came out of that. It's since shifted back to Paris and Tokyo and whatever. I'm going on a tangent. So anyway, so I love the movie, and I'm watching the movie, and I just thought it was again. I'm like, look at this movie, and Barry Gordy directed that movie, and I was like, wow, this is crazy. Like, who could even do that movie now? Like, a black person could be a big enough star? Because Diana Ross also was a great actress. And she could really act. You know, so she wasn't just on there because she was on there because she was Diana Ross, but she like really was delivering in the role. She had gotten nominated for Lady Sings the Blues, I guess, a year or two before. Like, so, you know, but it was just an interesting story. And just interesting to see the star power that she had. You know, we talked about last week of Mary Wilson and the Supremes. And just like, I wonder, like, who is there a black woman who has that level of star power now? People say Beyonce, right? I don't agree with that. Now, obviously, Beyonce is like a megastar. Like, so I don't want no beef from the Beehive and nothing like that. She is a megastar. But I still don't think it's what Diana was in like 73, 74.
I don't think that Beyonce is the triple threat that Diana was.
There it is.
That might be it. I think Beyonce, you know, does okay with acting. She's not, you know, famously her best role, I think, was playing Diana Ross or the Diana Ross character in
Dreamgirls.
Dreamgirls. I think she embodied that and did an incredible job, but no one saw the tidal wave that was Jennifer Hudson
coming
for that other part. Right?
With Effie, playing Effie.
Right. But I think if Beyonce cut her acting chops a little bit more, maybe. But I agree. I don't see a star that parallels that in today's world. I don't.
Yeah.
Also, I don't. There isn't that the amount of content that we have right now is so much more exponentially greater than what was happening in the 70s. In the 70s, one movie came out that week and everybody went to see it. Versus now, it's like we have so many more choices that.
Cool.
Nobody is going to go, you know what I mean? Like, no movie is going to go.
Especially back then.
Diamond like that.
We definitely didn't get a lot. You know, we had the black exploitation movies, so we would go see those. But, like, a black, like, major blockbuster release, which what Mahogany was back then, that happened every, like, maybe 5 years. You know what I'm saying? Like, that of that level of blockbuster. So, like you said, everybody went to see it. And I just thought it was interesting because that story in that movie, like, it literally could come out now and you wouldn't even have to change much. Like, it was, you know, you probably would, you know, you have to add social media and cell phones and all that type of thing. But, like, the story in and of itself about this black woman who was fly and went over to Italy and got caught up in the bullshit. And, you know, it was like, it still works today. So, anyway, peace to Diana Ross. And
peace to Diane.
Peace to Miss Diane.
Miss Diane.
That's what they did, the flow. I was going to say something bad, but I'm not. I'm going to keep this positive.
The question, though, is do you think we'll ever get back to that, where there's going to be blockbuster movies again? And
that's what? A, that's a,
no.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Well, because obviously now with COVID, I don't know when people will be able to sit in the theater.
I don't know if movie theaters are going to survive.
Yeah, I don't either.
You will be able to. Let me rephrase that. Okay. There will be blockbuster movies. How you consume those blockbuster movies will be very different.
Yeah,
they had long ago started talking about dual releases prior to COVID. This was not something new. It is also a reason why a lot of the movie houses had partnerships sort of almost in line. Like, if you notice, it was very quick how they were able to adapt in terms of how you were able to get these movies. That's because this was not...
it was already in motion.
Yeah. Like, it was already in motion. You know, a big part of... a big part of the movie experience, and then we've talked about this, a big part of the movie experience was that you did not have that at home.
No.
And now you have that at home. And you can go to Best Buy and spend $500 and get you a really nice big TV.
4K.
Get you a nice, a nice surround sound. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And if you're in the barbershop on the right day, might be less than that.
Right? Like, you might catch Calvin come in with some shit off the back of the truck.
Yeah. So you never know what might fall off the back of the Walmart truck. So this is not... movie theaters will continue. The idea that movie theaters will go away, I think, is a little premature, because there is a level of experience that you can get at a movie theater that you cannot simply duplicate at home.
Like, and especially with movies like Godzilla vs. King Kong or Jurassic Park, or these kind of big blockbustery.
And there's an American.
It's part of the culture.
There's an American tradition of that is quintessentially a lot of people's first date. It allows, that sort of formative teenage years, right? Like you can, like that's when you kind of start to drop the kids off at like that 13-ish area. Because they're going to be in the movie theater.
It'll be all right.
And so, yes.
To your point, even like it's a family thing too.
Yes.
Like with this family night, if a movie comes out, like say Coming to America was going to be in the theaters, like that would be mom, dad, grandma, auntie,
multi-generational.
We're all going, like Black Panther was. We're all going.
Yes, and that's exactly so you're still going to have that. But what you're going to see is you're going to see less and less of these cineplexes, which is these sort of 8, 9, 10 theaters and these sort of little seats, and you're going to see more dine-in style theaters.
All those joints.
Boutique theaters.
Yeah. Yes, those boutique theaters where you can kind of get your seating. You can, in advance. You can, they're spacious. They're, it's going to be a little bit more pricey, but obviously, it's going to make more sense.
Yeah.
I think like right now, I believe the AMC Dine-In has, you can basically rent out the theater for like $100.
Future did that. Yeah. He got this gal he's been dating for a little minute now, and they put it online. He rented out the whole theater at Phipps Plaza, and it was just her and him. I think a couple of his homies, and I don't know what movie they watched. But yeah, they rented out the whole theater and watched.
Yeah, you can. It's literally, I think, like Jordan and her friends like made a plan to do that, to just kind of be able to hang out and have that experience, because it's still, you can microwave popcorn. I can go to Five and Below and grab all the little box of Raisinets that shit.
you can't really
duplicate the nachos. Yeah. You can't really duplicate the hot dogs
or the popcorn. Really, like really, can't.
You can't. It's not really the same.
It's not the same. Don't curl all the way over.
Yeah, it'll definitely come back, but how we consume it, and instead of us going to the movies maybe, 6 times, 7 times a year, that's probably going to look more like 3 times. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? More or 4 times a year. So
you're right. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I just want to just reiterate this Diana Ross thing because it just popped in my head. To reiterate to people how big she was. So I think it was 80, 79 or 80, maybe 81. She did a concert in Central Park. It's on YouTube and everything. She did a concert in Central Park. Obviously, it was free. She was like, Diana Ross, and she was like a megastar. She had I'm Coming Out, had this came out. She was like, she's always been a megastar, so whatever. She's doing this concert in Central Park. So she sets it up, comes out. The shit is dope, actually. Comes out doing African dance. Shit is fly. And then the million people, 1 million people came to Central Park to see Diana Ross that day. And mid-concert, the skies opened up. And it rained. I don't even gonna call it rain. It monsooned. Like, and she stood out there, like, thunder, lightning. She stood out there till they basically had to damn near drag her off the stage. Like, she's like, nah, we're gonna stay. And people stayed. Some people, a lot of people ran out, but some people stayed. Anyway, so she did a rain date the next day, and 800,000 people came back to see her.
And it That's was insane.
So
I've seen footage of this. It's, yeah, you see it. Quite it's incredible.
It's a documentary. I think you can watch the whole thing about the show and about she came back. It's incredible. But that shows the level of how, what she was like. She can bring on a million people to watch her in concert. Anyway, let's move on. I want to give a shout out to a Twitter friend. I think you follow her too, bro. You follow Kim Alexander?
Yeah.
So I do. Kim Alexander, she lives in Dallas. I was actually going to give her a shout out because she tried the Popeyes fish sandwich. So Popeyes came out with a Cajun flounder sandwich for you niggas. Dropped this week past. And so she gave me her review. But, you know, Kim's really into fitness and whatnot, so she didn't really put the condiments on it. And she basically had it dry. Yeah, she had it dry. She said it was
that's,
all
right. That's not a review, then.
It ain't a review. I was like, Kim,
you got to start with the full sandwich as is.
Yeah,
she didn't take away to your liking.
She didn't do the tartar sauce. She didn't do the pickles. She didn't do none of it. So, but she said it was all right. She was all right. And peace to her because she said a pipe burst in house because, again, she lives in Dallas and it's crazy out there. So we'll get into the Texas thing in a minute. Did you, I forgot to ask you, did you watch Basketball Wives?
No, I saw it was coming back and I actually took a really much needed break from everything the last few days.
I
deactivated Twitter. I'm off Facebook for a little, like, I just had to rest and we just been watching The Sopranos. I caught a couple of shows, but not anything new.
Okay. I ended up like watching Basketball Wives late last night. I hadn't planned on watching it, but I was watching basketball and the game had got out of hand, so I kind of flicked over. Who's on it is obviously Shawnee, but only Shawnee's only on it on a phone so far. She hasn't physically shown up yet. Evelyn was kind of like guiding the ship last night. She was kind of like the one, you know, everybody was kind of calling because they're going to a mansion all together. And Evelyn, she's like, well, because of COVID, I figured we could all, you know, of course, the storyline. I figured we could all rent a mansion and then we could all meet up there and hang out and have girls' time.
Nothing could go wrong there.
Even COVID. Like, how could we get COVID if we're all just in a mansion hanging out? Duh. So anyway, so it's Evelyn, Jennifer's back. Christy, OG, Malaysia, what's her name? The cute girl. Kristen is her name, maybe?
Okay, yeah.
And the girl from New York. The girl was a rapper, whatever, the license girl. She was Evelyn's friend. She's from New York. She was on it, and am I forgetting anyone? I believe that is all of them. I believe that's it. So the carryover from last season is Evelyn, and Evelyn had a beef with this woman, OG. The kind of with Chad or whatever. So OG is this she's Nigerian. I believe she's Nigerian or Ghanaian. I believe she's Nigerian, though.
She's the former professional football player.
Yeah, she played professional in a women's league. She's very in shape, very athletic built. And Evelyn kind of well, not kind of, we got very colorist with her. It was like, oh, you look like, she sent her thing with telling she looks like a monkey, and, you know, I'm scared of you, you're aggressive, I'm scared you're going to be, and she got Shawnee and some of the other women to turn on OG with this aggressive thing, which everybody on social media is like, you got to be fucking kidding me, Evelyn.
Evelyn invented glass aggressive. Throwing. I mean, she did.
Bottle throwing, jumping over tables at people, like being the most aggressive woman on any reality show. But now because this woman OG, she knows, Evelyn knows, I can't beat her ass. She ain't scared of Evelyn at all. And Evelyn knows I can't beat her ass. So I got to spin this thing because if I do got a one-on-one with her, I'm going to get fucked up.
Yeah. Evelyn's a chihuahua.
She's a chihuahua. Exactly.
Very much.
She's definitely like, I'll throw something, but then y'all better grab me.
Yeah. I'm going to fight you during production.
Yeah. I'm going to fight you when there's 30 people in between us. Yeah. Exactly. So that it was a whole big thing where they were trying to kick OG off the show, and there was a huge backlash from the watchers, from the viewers, saying like, "Yo, that's some bullshit. You're attacking this woman because she's brown skin, because she's, you know, she's not the light skin, pretty girl that you guys kind of lean on." So they were attacking. It was basically Shawnee and Evelyn had really ganged up on her and tried to turn a lot of the other cast members against her as well. So then OG didn't get kicked off. Well, she did get kicked off. Oh, that's what it was. They did the reunion last year, and they wouldn't let OG come to the reunion. They taped her separately, still citing the whole, we're scared of her.
We're scared of her. How the fuck did I miss all of this? Either I completely took it. I think I just erased the memory because I don't care.
What is going to say, bro? You going to say something? Did I tell it wrong?
No. I think you're telling it right. I'm definitely deferring to you getting the story right in terms of what happened. I'm just saying that a lot of times that may not have been them pressing that issue.
Oh, you might have been higher ups or whatever.
Yes. I'm just saying, again, I have no intimate knowledge of their production, but I don't necessarily know that Evelyn gets to say, I don't want to do this. And then that's just, you know what I'm saying? Like, she just waved it on. You know, right. And I'm not being dismissive of however she felt. I'm just saying that that's usually a step or two above.
Okay.
Everyone, because that takes a minute to set up, right? Like, that has to be planned. You don't just record remotely.
Yeah, of course.
You know, the day of, right? Like, that's usually something, you know, planned out.
I'll call it a rumor or whatever. What people were saying online was, because, you know, Shawnee is the executive producer of the show. And her and Evelyn are close, so they were saying maybe people were insinuating that Evelyn went to Shawnee, because that's her buddy, and said, Shawnee, I was like, can you get her to not record with us? Now, again, I don't know how that happened.
And I'm just saying, I don't have intimate knowledge of their situation, but
that doesn't happen.
That's a wild speculation at best.
Okay.
And that is, and I get why someone would think that, but there are, that is intimating that Shawnee is a day-to-day EP and has the ability to make that call.
Okay.
Again, I'm not saying she does not.
Yeah,
I'm saying that's the assumption here.
Okay. Okay, so that all that has spilled over into this first episode of this season, because a lot of people didn't think OG was coming back, or they didn't know what's going to happen. And then, you know, on the show, they're like, oh, OG's coming to the house too. And Evelyn's like, oh, who invited her? And so the season's going to be a lot about their conflict and hopefully them making amends in some kind of way, and the colorist thing and all that stuff, along with COVID and everything else.
Nothing you're saying is making me want to watch this. Like, I'm going to check out the first episode, but like, watching 40 to 50 year old women argue, is this the only genre? Can we please move on?
Can we please stop?
With reality.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll catch up, like, as it, you know, randomly throughout the season. And it's not appointment viewing. Like, it's Monday night.
I mean, nine o'clock. Talking shit, but I'll probably watch it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll watch it.
I will say, as much as that is the sentiment, that does not reflect viewership.
The ratings are there. Because it wouldn't be packing if it wasn't.
I promise you. And that is not that is not an indictment of those women or the issues that they have or production. When there is an active attempt at trying to show a particular thing that does not resonate, usually it does not resonate well with the viewers.
No, absolutely. People and want to that's drama.
That's just a reality, because remember, we gauge everything now a little differently. We're not just a eyeballs on the TV. Engagement also is an impact factor. And when you see a lack of engagement, that's usually not a good sign.
Okay. So you mean like with people tweeting and...
Or people talking about it. Listen, if you have 400,000 people watching a show, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just throwing out a number. If you have 400,000 people watching a show, and out of those 400,000, like fucking, 250 are online commenting on it, engaged in it, like thoroughly enthralled in it, is very different than the dead 400, right? Like that, you know what I'm saying? Like that number, if the number isn't active, it's kind of not viewed the same.
I got you. It's like a Twitter account that has like all these followers, and when they tweet, they don't get no retweets. It's like,
yeah, what is this exactly.
What it means?
There's no active activity
there. And I know, just going on message boards and stuff, you can say what you want, but like I'll look at a message board where they're talking about, let's say, Real Housewives of Atlanta, and nothing really kind of dramatic happens in the show, or maybe it's a show where they make up or they're kind of having a good time. People would be like, "This is boring. This is boring. Where's the drama?" Like that's
what the drama. I don't mean to go off on a tangent here, right? But a part of that too is that they feel like the drama is authentic because the women are usually sort of in an element and in a zone when that particular stuff happens. And I don't mean drama in the most extreme sense, right? Like obviously you're enthralled if you're, pulling Kenya by her hair and dragging her across the stage, right? Like clearly you're engaged, right? But there are also other times, you know what I'm saying? I mean, when you watch some of these shows, man, like it kind of is what it is. And I think that's
my point. It is.
And I think people
tune in to watch for a certain thing.
And I think that when you try to implement or push or shove this element of something that doesn't feel genuine, I think that reflects to people. People kind of can feel that. Mm. I think we've seen that with a few of the sort of charities.
Yeah.
Right? Like the charities that we've seen that we never really kind of hear of again. And I mean this across the board. So I'm not necessarily picking on anyone in particular. Mm-hmm. It's just to me, that's what it seems like people are engaged in.
Yeah. 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 So that was the production segment of the show.
Again, I have no intimate knowledge of anybody's production deals, schedules, or any of that shit.
What you getting paid, what the trailer look like, I don't know shit.
Nothing.
Inca, Love and Marriage Huntsville? Or, bro, did you watch?
Absolutely not.
Oh, bro, you're checked out. Did you watch, Inca?
I did. Yes.
I gotta say, bro, you might want to pick up. It's nothing positive, but it's spicy as fuck. Like every episode is getting more spicy. Like they turning up the heat in this motherfucker, man.
Terrible show.
So your man Martell going after Wanda?
Tisha's mom needs her own circle of people to do social things with. Just randomly showing up at these parties, her daughter is like, it's too much.
No tie. So the part that what happened was Kimmy is one of the wives on the show. Her son graduated college, but she wasn't able to really do much for him because of COVID. So she decided to do like a little event outside, like a little food and a cake or whatever, with just them. So Tisa, another wife, invited her mother to this event, but of course, it wasn't Tisa's place to invite her mother or anybody to this event because it wasn't her event. So Wanda, her mother, shows up and everybody's like, what the hell is she doing here? Because she has no tie to the boy. No tie. I don't even know if they know each other. I don't know if they've met.
And Kimmy and Wanda don't rock like that anyway.
At all. Yeah, they don't like each other really. So Wanda shows up at the event and immediately, you know, goes, so Mel leaves the event because Martell shows up, her soon-to-be ex-husband, and she's very uncomfortable. Now, Mel was going somewhere, because that outfit, I ain't never seen Mel dressed like that. Titties out, skirt
Mel
short.
Is
Mel was going. Mel got a boo, and she was
we
going
got
to meet
dark
him.
Hair Mel back, and yeah, she is showing it off.
Showing it off. She was going to meet somebody after that event, because the event was during the day. Ain't no
I
way
you
dress
so.
Like that.
I think she's just dressing.
Huntsville, Alabama?
She's dressing all the way up every time she gets on camera. I don't know that she was doing.
I ain't never seen
them.
I ain't never seen Mel titties out. Never.
I have.
You see Mel
remember
titties
when she was? She went to get some award or something, and the whole family was there. Her dress was open down to like her navel.
Okay.
I've seen them before. It's
know.
Not.
Okay. Well, with all that speculation anyway, so we ain't got to, you know, lean on that. So Mel gets uncomfortable. She leaves. Wanda decides to go after her and say, you know, you're a beautiful girl. You beautiful. You could go. You could get you another good man. You don't need to, you know, don't let him do that to you, girl. You good. You got to go on. You beautiful. All of a sudden, Martell comes sprinting out, goes after Wanda, because apparently Wanda went on a live and was talking
shit.
That's
what that is?
Yeah, Wanda went on a live and was talking shit about Mel and Martell's kids, comparing them to Tisa and Marceau's kids, and saying like, "Oh, Tisa and Marceau's kids is cuter, and you know the hair is longer, and you know that down south bullshit, you know." And
it's so super nasty for no
super
reason.
Super nasty, and then so that's why Martell was so hot. But Martell doesn't do himself any favors because he's completely out of control. This whole
screaming at a 65-year-old woman like out in the street. What's wrong with you?
Yo,
what is this? Like the whole, it's very disconcerting.
Yo, bruh, I thought about you when with this one part because you would have got a kick out of it. So Mel and Martell are sitting down and they're going over dissolving the businesses that they have together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so of course, that conversation turns into like what happened in the marriage, and you did this, and I did that. Blah, blah, blah. It's really more Martell going at Mel. Mel's not really arguing with him. He's just like, you know, he's like, yeah, yeah. This nigga says dead ass with a straight face. It was so country and southern and fucked up. He's like, hey, I know I did my cheating. I did my cheating, but I was home every night at 7.
He's like, I came home every night.
I came home every night.
Good father.
I was a good father to them kids.
He
I ain't
never wanted
all night.
For anything
I never
financially.
I never one for none. Y'all was straight. Now, I know I did my cheat now. I did cheating. I did that. Mm-hmm. But I came home every night. Now, you got to give me props for that.
And Mel is trying to keep it to business. She's like, no, I started Embrace without you. Why would you get any of that money? He's like, I should get 50%. She was like, okay, then dissolve. Hits a button on her computer and was like, I'll shut it down right now.
Yeah, nobody the company's dissolved. Your man said I was cheating, but at least I came home every night. So you got to give me.
Do you now see why I don't watch?
Why you don't watch? Yo, I couldn't believe, and the nigga was dead ass. Like he was dead ass,
dead serious.
You know,
I say this again. Tell me the difference between This and Love and Hip Hop, other than that they got degrees.
Ain't no difference.
No difference.
You know what I'm saying? And
that nigga's Peter. That nigga's Peter.
And frankly, there are a lot of motherfuckers out there like that.
Oh hell yeah, a lot.
And I don't mean just the men. I'm just saying the women who are also engaged in those relationships, right? Like,
yeah.
I just find it fascinating how, you know, one is berated and is, you know what I'm saying? Like their entire panel discussions about one, while the other one, there's nothing.
Yeah, it's like, hey, that's just what it is. Yeah, so it's a spicy season, man. So far, as you know, it's a bunch more shit that we can get into, but we'll hold off. But
just a weird ass dynamic all the way around.
Yeah, and
I think Keisha in her head seems to believe that she's in competition with this other couple with Mel and Martell. And is anyone else feeling that? Is it just her who's very much wrapped into like?
It's just her.
You have to be loyal to me and my husband, and you can't be friends with them. And I'm like,
yeah, it's like some third grade shit. If I'm mad at her, then you have to be mad at her too, and you can't talk to her, even though she didn't do nothing to you.
She gets that from her mother, obviously.
She totally gets that from her mother. Yeah, but it's very interesting to watch Martell because underneath all his craziness, you watching a nigga. I feel like you're watching a nigga who's actually petrified.
He never, even with the
cheating and the fucking, all the fucked up shit he did, he never thought she would actually bounce.
Yeah.
Never. He's like, oh, she'll be mad for a while. We'll argue. You know, eventually we'll get back together. He never thought that she would click off on him like that and be like, I'm done. It's over. I'm not fucking with you no more. I'm not even arguing with you no more. Like, I'm dissolving businesses.
I got nothing for you. Yeah.
I got nothing for you. And I think she has a boo. But anyway, let's move on. I wanted to just, I guess it's late, but should we mention the impeachment findings? It was like, you know, it was over the weekend, or Saturday.
Just a waste of time. I mean, it was riveting television, but I don't think that we were the intended audience because we already knew that shit was happening. It was for the Republicans who were not there to see it. And God bless.
Yeah. I mean, I just find that, one day, I guess, a book or a movie or something will come out to make us understand what the attachment is to Trump at this point, because they've lost the Republicans have lost the Senate, they've lost the House, they've lost the presidency. Trump, you know, even if they don't stop him, you know, they don't put something down so he can't run again, that's still 3 years away. It's like 3 years away, right? And again, we don't know what's going to happen because you never know what's going to happen. Joe Biden and Kamala are off to a great start. Now, we don't know how long it'll last, but right now Biden's rating is approval rating is 62%, which is really high. You know, like Trump never sniffed that. Trump never got to 50, I don't think. And, you know, they're doing good things with the vaccine. They're going to be sending out some more stimulus money. You know, they seem to, you know, and things are kind of like, quote unquote, back to normal. Like, you know, you don't have to wake up every morning and be like, what the fuck did this dude tweet today? Or, you know, like, who the fuck is he arguing with today? Or, you know, there's no, you know, the press secretary isn't beefing. It's like back to some normalcy. So if things keep going on any type of trajectory like this, like in 4 years, 3.5 years, what Trump's going to run again? But run again, and what's he going to say? He's going to say, "I'm a fucking, you know, like let's get back to how it used to be when it was fucked up." Like,
is he going to run again though? Because
I don't think he is.
I don't know that he can raise the kind of funds for a presidential campaign at this point with the amount of people who are quote unquote done with him and done lending to him and contributing and that sort of thing.
I would not underestimate 74 right. million people and their nickels and dimes. You know, I don't necessarily know that he ever really was sort of ingratiated with corporate America in a way that would have put a needle or put a dent in how he was able to raise funds. I would not be surprised. I mean, we also know that he has foreign, you know, people in his pocket, and it would be nothing for them to give him, you know, $30 million of, you know what I'm saying? Like that shit is literally ashtray money for them. They would definitely do that again in order to get someone who can easily be controlled and is ultimately a puppet into the office. So I just think that we should be very mindful and be very careful of being dismissive of the fact that he, one, has the ability to do this. I think this entire process was very masturbatory, right? Like it was very for the people there, right? This was all about, let the record show, right? Like Claire Huxtable, the record show. That's all this shit was about. They wanted to be able to go down in history as being on record saying this stuff. This had nothing to do with this being an actual winnable case. We, you know, this is the whole point. Even when they didn't allow witnesses. Mm. When the Dems were like, nah, we going to do this. And then the word was, there was rumors that motherfuckers just wanted to be home for Valentine's Day weekend.
Well, I followed up on that. And again, this is what they said. And who knows really what it was. But what they said kind of made sense was that if you opened up the door to witnesses, it goes on forever.
I mean to cut you off, but here's the problem with that. Either you do this for the sanctity of doing it, or you don't. Right? Mm-hmm. Either, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't get to just go to church and be baptized within the first 15 minutes of service. No, bruh, you're there all day, right? Because this is a part of the process. All I'm saying is that you can't pick and you can't try to stand on a soapbox and stand on this, you know, moral high ground of righteousness and then not go through the process. Don't tell me you go, you know what I mean? Then yes, you are actually telling me that this was all for show, that this was all pomp and circumstance. And the moment it served your purpose, right? Once you were on the record, once the history books would say your name was being against this, you were fine with whatever that outcome was. And if that's the case, then just say that. Don't sit here and try to make excuse after excuse about, oh, we couldn't open this up because, you know, it would go on forever. Then so fucking what? We here now?
Yeah, but you wanted to see this shit like last until fucking April?
I don't fucking care. If that's what it takes. If that's what it takes, don't tell me you standing on the side of righteousness. If it's just like, listen, man, if you make a commitment to fucking do something that is honorable and righteous, then you have to see that commitment through and you have to overturn every stone. You don't get to sit there and tell me how much of a staunch advocate you are for righteousness, and then you fucking pull your foot off the gas. No, full throttle. And if we lose this shit going to buck 80, don't lose this shit doing 75. Oh. That's just how I feel.
However long it had to go on, it doesn't
to me, man. Like, look, motherfucker, if I'm getting jumped, oh, they get everything, nigga. I'm not holding back nothing. Because when I go down, nigga, yeah, somebody going down
with me.
I'm just saying, man. It's gotta be. You just can't operate in that sense and then not expect people to criticize the fact that it was a show, the fact that it was pomp and circumstance, right? Okay. Because we knew early on that it was virtually impossible for them to convert the 17 Republicans.
17 people, yeah.
So if you wanted to do like that's what I'm trying to say. If we knew then. So if the point was we're not going to win this, there's no need to even do the impeachment at all. Mm. But if you're going to do the impeachment, don't half-ass it. You there. You know what I'm saying? Like, you there.
Yeah. All right.
It's like, nigga, you tell me, yo, come help me move. And then at like 1 o'clock, I'm like, I'm out. And you still got the couch ain't on the truck.
TV. TV still on the stand.
TV still on the wall. I'm like, I'm out.
You're like, nigga,
you help me move.
Nigga, the bed frame ain't broke down yet.
Yeah. Like, come on, man. Come on.
Grab them pliers, nigga. Go on. All right. Cool. So, WandaVision. Did you watch the last episode, Inca?
Have
you
watched? Did. You don't like this so
type
good.
Of shit, bro. You don't like this type of. You don't like this type of shit. and he don't like. You don't like that.
Thumbs down.
Yeah, he hates all that science fictiony superhero shit. Yo, that last episode was yo. This is another one. Every episode getting better and better and better.
Yeah, but it's short enough that I can handle it. Like,
because they're only like 30 minutes, right?
What's the show we were watching that was like a season finale every week? Lovecraft Country. It's yeah, like that but it's condensed into small bite-sized pieces.
Yeah.
So pieces this can, I can handle.
You can swallow nice.
Yes. It's very good though. I'm really
really good.
This story is
so
unbelievable. So
on good. The on the you know, the things I watch add the heavy spoilers on it. I know you and Trav watch them too. They're saying they think Agnes is controlling all this. Because Agnes is a witch. In the comics, Agnes is a witch. Which is why that's why she wears a certain brooch. She wears a brooch, and if you notice, she wears a brooch in every scene. Travis probably knows it. She wears a brooch in every scene. Her real name is something Ness, but they said that they condensed it down to Agnes, and that's why she's the best friend and all that, because they think Agnes is actually controlling Wanda.
But what about when Vision zapped her and
I watched the guy said again. This is his theory. First, I was like, eh, but he said that he thought Wanda was fronting when she was in the car and he zapped, and she was, because he, this is what the guy said. He said, if you notice, nobody else could speak. But when he went to the car, Wanda spoke. She was like, I'm trying to find downtown or the public square.
Agnes,
he was like, yeah, she's probably fronting. And then he said that he zapped her and blah, 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 blah. But he said, like, she was acting like she didn't know where she was going. But as soon as he zapped her back, she knew exactly where to go. So again, this is all theories. We don't know. There is something with that character that is going to be revealed. She's not just a goofy dude.
I think there is. I really enjoy Catherine Hahn as an actress. I think she's, the stuff that she chooses to do is incredible. Mm-hmm. And this role, I do see that it could be a lot more. You're right. Maybe she is controlling it. I don't know. I don't get that deep into it. I was happy I found the Easter egg of the card trick from Ant-Man 2. Okay.
See, I didn't see Ant-Man 2.
What? Ant-Man and the Wasp?
I didn't see the Wasp joint.
But there's a trick, a card trick he's trying to get in Ant-Man 2, and he finally gets it when they start to get it. But anyway, I was proud of myself that I got that.
Oh, shit. The card trick.
You need to talk to Trav about this, because I'm just watching for fun.
Is it 8 or 10 episodes? I don't even know.
I don't know. I don't think Disney has told anybody either.
I don't think anybody knows. Because the cool thing about this is, like, unlike most new series, they didn't drop all of them at the same time.
Right. Speaking of Disney, though, did you see the Cruella trailer?
Nah. Is it a Cruella movie?
There's like a young Cruella, like, coming of age story that's coming to Disney Plus, I believe, or theaters, and they cast Emma Stone as young Cruella, which I thought was brilliant. But of course, in the land of Twitter, everybody has a problem.
Emma Stone is dope. That's gonna be fire.
I love Emma Stone.
Yeah, I love Emma Stone too. But WandaVision, if you're not watching it, and you can catch up, because again, the episode is only 30 minutes. But I highly suggest you do. you're gonna watch. I know Brian watched. This is the last thing he would watch. But I highly suggest anybody who's going to watch, definitely go to YouTube and do those little shows. Because those shows are only like 10 minutes long.
Think it's more fun without it.
I like it. Because you'd be realizing how much shit, especially for me, I realize how much shit I miss. I'm like, oh, I didn't even realize that. I didn't realize it. So
even if you're like a casual Marvel viewer like I am, it's still very enjoyable.
Yeah, that's a dope show. It's dope. It's super dope and really interesting. So definitely watch that. What else do we want to talk about? Oh, this piece, The Queen Sugar, came on last night, premiered. Good episode. You know, the same thing, you know, the Southern drama. Charlie's fighting to get her mill back. You know, there's a new character who's also another light-skinned, mixed-race woman who's a lawyer. She's basically like the bad Charlie. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's like the bad Charlie. Like, she's in there, and she's fighting. She starts this battle with Charlie because she's trying to take over the parish, and it's, you know, but so, you know, again, only first episode, but it's, you know, I love that show. So I'm very interested to see what they do with the season. They're definitely going to be addressing COVID. They show it in the upcoming episodes. They're going to be talking about the virus coming to the town and coming to the land and all that. So, so Queen Sugar is back. I got to check in with Cousin Reagan to see if she's going to be on there this season. I got to check in. So let's talk about Texas. Let's talk about Texas. let's talk about the middle of the country. It's weird because that this deep purple weather, you know, on the map would be purple. This deep purple weather usually doesn't touch below.
Yeah. They're getting the weather for my neighborhood.
That's what I'm saying. They get in the neighborhood. They get in the weather that New York would get, and you know, upstate New York and Maine and you know, New Hampshire or whatever. I mean, it's cold. It's chilly for sure. So you can't walk outside with shorts. But we're not -1, -5, -10. So this has reached all the way down to Texas, and Texas is having a disastrous time dealing with this, partially because. And Brooke, correct me if I'm going off course, but because I didn't realize this, they privatized all their gas and stuff. Mm-hmm. So they're off the, there's kind of like a American grid that deals with this stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're off the grid. They're like, nah, fuck that. We're going to do our own thing. But they still are doing mostly coal and gas. They put in some wind stuff, but only 10%, and they didn't upgrade the wind stuff. So with the wind, with the windmills, the ones Trump was saying to kill birds on, stupid ass shit. There are you can put carbon propellers on them, and ice doesn't stick to carbon propellers. And they also have heated ones where if it does get ice, you could also turn on the heat, and it just turns back to water, melt away. They didn't do that,
right?
So they got the old ones.
My understanding is that sometime during the aughts or the early 2010s, Texas voted to privatize all of their energy.
Yes.
So they are now no longer subject to the federal regulations that say that you have to upgrade your systems every so often, you have to respond to climate change, blah, blah, blah. As a result, the power grid is overloaded in Texas. And there is nothing that can be done about it in a timely fashion to help these people.
We can't even, the rest of the government, I guess, the American government, can't really help them because, again, they're not on the grid. They're not part of our, they're not part of the thing, except El Paso. Western Texas did not vote to go off the grid.
That's Beto country, yeah.
It's Beto country. So Beto and them, they got heat. They good. But Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, all those cities within North and South Texas are completely screwed. There's like millions of people with no power.
The people that do have power, they're cycling it. So you'll get like 1 or 2 hours of power in the middle of the day.
Yeah,
and then it'll be gone for the rest of the day.
And then in Dallas, I think it's happened in Houston too, but definitely in Dallas, like downtown Dallas, they put all the power there. So like people live like in an area called Highland Park, which is basically like the Beverly Hills of Dallas. So the people who lived in those high flat condos and those little banging ass townhouses or houses in that little section, they good. They've had power. But everywhere else around, it's like they're lit and everywhere else around them is dark or coming in and out like every couple hours. I spoke to Bun B. And I spoke to my homeboy Carl, who lives in Plano. Bun obviously lives in Houston. And both of them on Saturday, I talked to them and they were good. And then by Sunday, it was a disaster. Bun actually hit me today and he said, it's so crazy down there that he said there's like four super, I'm gonna pull it up on my thing. He said there's four supermarkets in his area. Three of them are closed, just dead, right? One of them was open. He said they went to the grocery store today, and the grocery store had the one that was open had no power, so they literally threw all their meat and shit away. I guess by law they have to because you can't sell people meat that's like unrefrigerated in case they get sick, you know. So they literally just threw all their meat and you know, cold cuts or whatever in the trash. Because they got no power. I asked him if people back there like in the dumpsters taking it out. He said the shit was already gone when they opened. So maybe people went there and grabbed shit or whatever. Like it's way more desperate than I think even we realize down there right now.
Yeah, I can imagine. I have a couple people down in Houston you know, they are dealing with, you know, shit like no brownouts, in and out, no water, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. You know, the reality is that Texas is not equipped for the severity of this winter storm that they got, right? Like, yeah, they don't have the ability to handle all of the roads that they have. And Texas has a vast interstate, like, mm-hmm, massive interstate, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's literally how you get around. I know, yeah, for most people in the Eastern Seaboard, and that sort of, I would probably say, Philadelphia to like Connecticut area, like they're always sort of back roads for us to take. Like, yeah, we easily, yeah, jump off a highway and, yeah, sort of take a back way around. And that's not really how things can operate, particularly, nope, out there. So,
nope,
I'm wishing those folks well. I see a lot of people talking about things like generators and stuff like that. You know, look, obviously hindsight is 2020. It's not really something that they tend to think about because power doesn't seem to go out very often.
No.
Obviously, coupling that with brutal temperatures, that's, you know, really been tough. If you can afford one, you know, it would probably be good for you to think about a generator, but they are pricey. They're very expensive. They're not, yeah, easy to get. Some of the smaller ones, I mean, you're talking about a few outlets, right? Like, you're not really able to run an entire house.
Yeah.
And that's also, you have to go get gas for those, right? Like, those are powered by gas. They're not natural gas powered, right?
Yeah.
Unlike a stable sort of home generator. So, you know, I would just advise those folks, man, to do the best you can. Find out, one of the things I'm seeing burst pipes a lot.
Yeah, a lot of busted pipes.
One of the things you should do, particularly if you're a homeowner and also if you live in an apartment, is try to locate your valves. Know where your shutoff valves are. Hmm. That's vital to seizing the damage, right? Like, once that pipe bursts, it's burst, right? Like, there's really, yeah, not much you can do until that gets repaired, but at least you can stem the water flow. Yeah. So it doesn't damage the rest of the house and the rest of your property. And they're going to have a lot to deal with. You know what I'm saying? After this, I mean, they just went through a storm a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And a flood rather. So I'm hoping those folks pull through. You know, there's nothing, I've seen this and I've said this online, like, there's nothing funny.
No, that ain't funny.
Oh, Texas ain't, you know, like, look, man, like, I get it, you know, 5 years ago, whatever, when Atlanta got that, you know, inch of snow and they basically, yeah, shut down, you know, we were kind of frying them up a little bit. And I don't really think people had gotten hurt. I think it was an issue of inconvenience and traffic. Yeah. And I'm not even being dismissive of that being a big deal. Right. But, like, dude, people are straight dying, man. Like,
yeah, yeah,
like,
people are dying. People are freezing, like, to death. Like, because, like you said, it's like, not only, think about, okay, you've got no power, right? No water, which means you can't, you know, you got no power, which means you can't heat up your house. And it's like -3 degrees outside. It ain't, yeah, like, it's all, it's 53. No, nigga, it's like throw the water up in the air and it turns into fucking, you know, ice immediately. It's fucking brutal cold out
there. One of the things I suggest people do, particularly if you have elders or if you have children, if you can afford and you buy water, like, you get Poland Spring and things like that, like, stock up on a couple of those 5 gallon containers that you don't touch at all. This is also a time where it should be a reminder to people that dry goods, particularly in your pantry, are always good to have. Oatmeal, rice, pasta, things that live well, canned goods, tuna, things that you don't, that don't require refrigeration.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully the people that are losing power can actually cook the meats that they have and maybe sort of salvage that,
yeah,
to some degree. I'm hoping that people who are using gas appliances aren't, like, leaving them on. You can still get poisoned with that.
There was a there was a house that went up and some people died. It was a house went up because somebody was hot. They lit the fireplace for heat and something caught and, like, 4 people died in that shit. You know, it's like, little things people are not thinking of, like, you people, like, people are panicking now because your cell phone's dead because you got no power. So you can't charge your shit.
I'm telling you,
you gotta charge your phone in 2 days.
When Sandy hit, it was the same thing, right? Like that first day or so, I was like, oh, people are being, you know, overly cautious and overly ridiculous because we've seen it before when the people will say, hey, storms are coming and everybody run out, ain't no fucking bread, ain't no toilet paper. And the problem with that thinking is that it's going to be the one time that you actually do get this storm from hell and you're going to be shut down. And Sandy taught me that, you know, luckily we had the means to be able to send my kids, but my generator blew out, dude.
I remember that.
You know what I'm saying? I was out here like fucking standing watch.
I remember you told me
I was out here with a
shotgun.
With a machete, getting wood from the back.
Yeah, shit was real.
I had to pull my chair. I literally had to sleep. I had to set a fire, but luckily, again, I was blessed. I understand that not everyone has that, right? Like, not everyone has that particular ability, but also it was fairly dry, right? Like, so I was able to go get wood. You can't go out in freezing temperatures.
That's what I'm saying. Imagine doing what you had to do with Sandy. Like, imagine having to stand watch, but it's like 4 degrees outside.
Yeah, so
you know it's a whole different level.
You know, I just go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, just recovering from a pipe burst in your apartment or your house is 1,000 times worse when it's -2 degrees.
Yeah, because now your shit is ice in the crib, and it's just, again, and then like I said, no power, so no cell phones, no TV.
Their grid is down.
Their grid is down. You don't even know what's going on. And I gotta look this up, but I know there was real talk. I mean, I don't think it was going to happen, but there has been real talk lately about Texas trying to secede from the union. I don't think it's going to happen, but they've been talking about it for real. And I kind of wonder, and I want to look this up, so I'm talking shit right now, if part of privatizing their grid was part of that. Okay, so we could privatize
their grid. Possibly.
So we don't have to be part of the union when we go on to secede.
I think federally, there has to be something in place that stops you from privatizing certain things. Right? Because look what happened to the post office when that privatized, and now postal service is pretty much gone to hell.
Yeah.
We privatized, you know, the grid for power and water and things like that. Then an emergency happens and we're fucked all over again.
We're fucked up crazy.
My heart goes out to people in Texas. There is nothing worse than being cold, especially when you live in a place where you may not even own a winter coat because of where you live.
Exactly. Like,
Cold,
dirty, because you ain't to take a shower or wash yourself.
But just like, what a fucking failure of their state leadership and legislature. Like,
and then of course
your whole job is to serve the people, and then when they need it the most, you
ain't got it. And then and then of course they're trying to politicize it and say that's because of the Green New Deal, which is ridiculous because the Green New Deal is not even in place.
And
there's
also,
no Green New Deal.
Texas has done everything opposite the Green New Deal. Like,
exactly.
Your 10 wind turbines that you have in that big ass state are not causing this, bro. Like,
exactly.
That's not how this works at all.
Yeah, you know, so it's insane, man. I wanted to end the show talking about Judas and the Messiah.
Watched it Saturday night.
Yeah, I watched it yesterday. So give me your thoughts.
I think Daniel Kaluuya is a bit of an acting genius.
Yeah, he's ill with it.
He was Fred Hampton. Like, that role, I think, was incredible. And I'm one that is an absolute hater of British actors that come over here and eat. But your man, I think everybody that was cast was perfect in that role.
Perfect.
People are giving Lakeith Stanfield shit, but that, wow. Like, squirrely kind of weird character is, I think, his wheelhouse and where he lives.
But you saw in the movie the interview with the real Will.
That's the Eyes on the Prize 2 at the end. Like, as soon as it turned to the real guy, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, man. That's who he was. He was that guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was the little weird, quirky, like, off nigga. Like, that's who he was.
Just like a little squirrely where you think he's lying, but
yeah,
you know what I mean? You can't really, because he does that so well, even in bad movies. I think Lakeith Stanfield,
he's amazing,
gives an incredible performance. So I really enjoyed it.
I really
it made me
it
mad
too.
At white people, of course, well, but a lot of
we knew that
things
would happen.
Happening right now do that. But
there's only one thing, one minor complaint I had, and I guess it would have made the movie too long or took away from it, though. I wish they would have shown a little bit of backstory on Fred and William. In other words, like, show them with siblings or with the mom or whatever. Because I still don't get that people who don't know would know how young they were.
Right. Like, Fred Hampton was 21.
And William was 19. They were children. They were kids. They were, I think Fred's wife, I think she was about the same, like 20. They were like
she was 18 or 19.
Yeah, they were babies. They were like fresh out of high school. You know what I'm saying? They were like children. And I don't think that you get that quite, that youth, how young they actually were when you watch the movie. You feel like they're like 25, 26. Nah, they
especially
were like
since
teenagers.
The way that Martin Sheen as J. Edgar Hoover was also brilliant. I really like Martin Sheen, especially as he's like doing these old man roles that are so perfect for him. But it really brings home just how crazy J. Edgar Hoover was.
Yeah,
in thinking that these kids were that big a threat to, you know, American way of life or whatever, white people, however the threat was that he was holding these briefings about them. And also that, imagine what they could have done with more time.
Oh, there would have been, because Fred was brilliant in bringing in they were called the white crew squad, they were called the Young Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
There was a crew called the Young Patriots, lived like in outskirts of Chicago. They were like, you know, racist and all that shit. But the leader, I'm totally blank on his name, he was open-minded. And he ended up banding with them. And then they brought the Young Lords, which was the Spanish crew, or guys or whatever. And they all had kind of banded together. So it was going to be like this white crew of people, this Spanish crew of people, and then, you know, Fred's crew, and then the other gangs and stuff like that, too. They were all pulling together, so they, like you said, with more time, ain't no telling what they would have done, especially in that area, because they were like locked in together as it was. And again, they were just children. They were all children. Even remember, so the Bunchy Carter and the guys that they killed, they were from California. They went to UCLA. They were like 20 years old.
Right.
Everybody was crazy young.
The sequence of events, it kind of makes sense that they believed that this threat was real, that the Black Panther Party was going to kill all the cops, because they thread together kind of these speeches in succession and then the incidents that happened against police officers in very close proximity. So I get that whole thing. But also, like, it just made me mad at white people.
Of course it did. You know, because it was this huge plot that they carried out with William Carter. I mean, and at the end, explain not William Carter, was I forget his name.
William O'Neill.
How he went to he went into witness protection.
Well,
until he died.
Until he killed himself.
I'm trying to say allegedly.
It was very interesting to me. I enjoyed the movie. I saw someone review it on Twitter, and I think they had a really interesting take. I think it's similar to what you were saying, Jeff, was that the film is made with there being an assumption that there's a level of knowledge about the people involved in the film.
Yeah.
And I understand that. And I will say that, 2 hours is kind of like about as much as you can do.
Yeah,
on the movie before you
then it turns into some other shit, you know.
Before you start to lose people, I thought it was very interesting. I thought that there was some subtleties with the William O'Neill character that I thought was really telling, particularly how he would almost like you can clearly tell he's looking for white approval, right?
Absolutely,
He's, you know, he would dress up. His tone would change when he was around the FBI.
Kelly,
When he was at those dinners.
Yeah. Yes, when he went to those dinners, he was dressed to the nines. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, I saw somebody review it. Actually, it was on Roger Ebert's site because I just was kind of checking out the reviews. And he was like, they didn't dive enough into the motivation for, you know, why William O'Neill would do this. And I'm like, motherfucker, jail. Like, we don't have to make everything into, I know now in current times, everything needs to be this incredibly deep discussion and dissection of everything that happens. But 7 years in prison for somebody who was ultimately 19 years old and a fucking con man, right? Like yeah. he ain't out here in the street strong arming people, right? No. Like he probably recognized, hey, I'm really not built for prison, yeah. right? And if telling on these motherfuckers is going one, keep me out of prison, keep my pockets full, and keep me eating these ribeyes, then motherfucker, well, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah. Also, to the age thing, I think it would have explained it better as to like why he, like everything you said was 100% correct. But the age would also explain why he would have even thought like that. Because he was a kid.
Yeah.
He was a kid. He wasn't a man. He was a child.
And he, because he thought that, hey, once I did this, I was out, I was done.
Exactly. And, he didn't realize how deep he was getting in.
Sure. And you can tell. Even when you look at the eyes on the prize, in hindsight, you can tell he's being very defensive because he knew what he was a part of. And I think it explains why the moment he saw that, you know, basically the day it premiered is the day he killed himself. I don't think that there's any question that he probably was tortured about what had taken place. And again, being 19, he probably thought they're going to just arrest him. Yeah. They're just going to put him in jail, you know, whatever. I'll be able to sleep at night. And clearly, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. I also think Glua's performance was great. I don't know if I said this on Twitter, but oftentimes people with Southern roots are often refined in movies. And they're made to, and I'm using refined very loosely, right? Like this isn't a derogatory statement about people who have Southern roots and country folks, as we call them, right? But I just hate that there's always this sort of polished tone when they speak in movies. Like I hated how Frank Lucas was, Denzel did a great job, right?
Yeah, but you used to the taste of Frank Lucas. Nigga. You could barely understand him. He was country.
All outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like so often that shit is just sort of swept under the rug and how those a big part of that, those Southern roots and that heritage and having your family sort of move in the Great Migration. Like his story is one. His story, let's just say Fred Hampton lived a full life, right? Like his story is one of Black history, right? Like mm-hmm. this great migration, you go from Louisiana to Chicago and, you know, watching him on tape and sort of knowing who he was, again, you don't really appreciate just how young he was because nothing about him is 21.
Yeah.
Nothing about him in any capacity of how we envision a 21-year-old, be it now or 40 years ago, is just not what we were seeing and not what we were hearing.
Yeah, he wasn't dancing to Motown and hanging out and shit, you know?
And you know what? I will say maybe he was. Like maybe he was, he did yeah. have, maybe he had these dual, you know, maybe he had the ability to sort of operate as a full person. Like that's the other thing. It's like we only, you know, I love the fact that they had this relationship here because that I hate to say, you know, gave him a human side, right? Like that's such a
fucking I know what you're saying, though.
But it shows on screen.
Yes, it shows that he was not just this fucking 24-hour revolutionary that didn't have a sense of wanting to live a life, right? Being happy that his woman was pregnant, right? Like.
Yeah.
Like looking forward to having a child versus feeling like this was going to be cumbersome and something that was going to sort of hold him back. And I think they, you know, I mean, listen, we kind of know a lot of, I think they tamed the shootout with police.
Oh yeah. I think it was way worse.
It was way worse.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, that is not how it ended. But there's going to be some liberties and some licensings that are going to happen in the movie. I thought they did an excellent job. I think it's very clear that the family was involved.
Yeah,
that they had the blessing of the family, and that they were able to really. I think they knocked this out the park. I think Keith was really, really good. And somebody just kept saying, you know, I just kept seeing all of the reviews like, yeah, they didn't really, you know, sort of flesh out the character. And I'm like, I kind of felt like that was the point.
It was the point.
Like the character wasn't to be fleshed out.
The character was a blank nigga, which is why at the beginning, and I think people missed how important this was when he first met with Kelly, and Kelly asked him, yo, what do you think about Martin Luther King getting killed? He's like, nah, yo. What do you think about Malcolm X? He's like, I don't even think about that type of shit. Yeah, that's because he was nothing.
He was a lump of clay
in Chicago. Like you said, a con man nigga, robbing niggas with a fake badge. He was...
which was also stupid and brilliant at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved that beginning where he's pretending to be an agent and trying to steal somebody's car. Like, bro.
So, like, there wasn't much of the character to flesh out in that, like I said, he was a blank slate almost, which is why he was so impressed by Kelly and the house, and he brought me to his house, and he was like my mentor, like, because he had nothing going on. One last thing, I looked at a little interview with Fred Hampton Jr., and he said that what he and his mother would do from the time he was a child was like when any snitch or somebody like that would get killed or die, they would go to the funeral. He's like, they went to O'Neill's funeral. Mm. He's like, they would go to all that shit, like, fuck that, yeah, we still here. Like, we're not going to let you kind of, like, die in peace and people spin a story on you. Like, so he said they went to O'Neill's funeral, and his mother was like, that ain't him in the box, because they actually gave O'Neill plastic surgery to put him in witness protection. So she said that she found out later on it was him, but, like, his face was actually altered from what she remembered him being the 19-year-old kid, because they, you know, plastic surgery them up and sent them out somewhere, and you know, until he did that interview, he was on low. So he did an interview, I was in the project. He said that the next day he killed himself. It was a great movie, great. Oh, and you know, peace to I forget the act, Dominic Fishback, the woman who played his girl.
Who was excellent?
Excellent. Excellent. Everybody was awesome. So yeah, we're gonna wrap it up with that. Everybody stay safe. Texas stay safe. Like I said, you know, hopefully things will be a little bit back to normal. And I'm going to try and get Bun B on the show next week to kind of fill us in on what, you know, what really was going on in Texas. Because obviously he's there. He can tell us, you know, from the ground what's really happening. Right. And hopefully some changes will be going to be made soon to avoid this happening again. Because you can't predict the weather nowadays. You never know. You know, the
polar just predict vortex. That it's going to be very bad.
Exactly. So on that note, we're going to wrap it up, and we will see y'all next week.
Later.
Bye. Oh, happy birthday, guys. Mona.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.